I believe that the majority of people have no process, no framework, no model to make difficult decisions, and therefore they stay in the status quo and do nothing. And we call them, what do we call them? Mr.
Was Gonna.
That's right. Hey everyone, this is Cliff, and you're listening to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. Welcome back, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Today, Justin and I are discussing how to overcome fear, how short-term pain leads to long-term freedom, the need for a supportive spouse, and why now is the best time to take action and buy a franchise. We hope you enjoy the show, and please follow us as we drop new episodes each week on Wednesdays. All opinions expressed by Cliff, Justin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Phrenosity and Pursuit of Profit. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Pursuit of Profit, Phrenosity, Cliff, Justin, and guests of the podcast may maintain positions in the franchises discussed on this podcast.
All right. Hello, everyone. Hello, Cliff.
What's going on?
Solo pod today.
Okay. It's just you and I?
Just you and I. It's been a while since when we've been able to check in. And today we're going to answer an age-old question in franchising. What prevents someone from moving forward with a franchise business? And this is, you know, referring to someone who starts the process. Obviously, there's some motivating factor bringing someone to this process, but they end up not moving forward.
Okay.
And why? What are the reasons why people do not move forward? Most people don't, right? More people don't move forward than do. But I think it's important to start with an acknowledgement, because this can get kind of negative, right? We're talking about fear and like all these things that prevent people from doing things in life. This process is not easy. I mean, it's not rocket science, but this could be a daunting task. People are typically entering this process during a challenging or stressful time in their lives, feeling pressure, right? Either lost my job or job's not cutting it, need to generate more cash flow. This is my first time now possibly thinking about taking a risk, right? There's a lot of firsts involved here. First time owning a business, first time owning a franchise, first time exploring any of these industries that I'm looking at. And I'm realizing that there's thousands of franchises out there. It's tough. I mean, that's a tall order.
I completely agree. So this is a conversation that we're going to have about people who don't move forward and don't buy something for a variety of reasons.
This is a chat speaking to our experiences. Why do people end up walking away? But again, wanting to start off, I mean, think about it. Most people come to us with a brand in mind, and I think they're expecting it to be easy. Oh, yeah, I don't think I really need your help. I'm going to go buy this brand. And then they realize that brand doesn't call them back for whatever reason. That brand's already sold out. Or that, you know, you're in a registration state, you're in California, and the majority of franchisors are not registered to sell a franchise in California right now. We're recording this in April of 2024. We're in registration season. For those of you out there that don't know what that means, every year, every franchisor has to register a document called an FDD, franchise disclosure document. There are certain states called registration states where the franchisors have to go to that state, file their disclosure document, and the state has to come back to them to approve their disclosure and their ability to award franchises. And that could take time. So right now, a lot of franchises aren't even talking to prospects in certain states. So it's very easy to just say, oh, this is frustrating. This process sucks. I'm just going to walk away and do nothing and go get a job, right? I think the point is you really have to want it. You really have to want to own a business. Like, would you say that owning a franchise has to be a top priority?
Absolutely. And unfortunately, it's usually not, even though we explain to them that the brand does not want to hear, I can't make my call today because of my current job. They don't want to hear that. The same way someone you're dating doesn't want to hear that I can't go out Friday night because I'm going out with another person Friday night. It's like, excuse me? I thought you were interested in my brand. I thought you were interested in me. Oh, I am, but I got this other thing on the side that's actually taking a priority over you. And what the prospective franchisee doesn't understand is that brands do not care about your current career. They care about you progressing and attending these calls and attending webinars and conducting your due diligence. They're not rushing it. They just expect your engagement. They expect you to be present when you commit to be present, right? Too many people are comfortable booking calls and pulling no-shows.
And even if you end up making it through this process, putting other things first, but you get through the due diligence, you get comfortable, you're awarded the franchise and you end up moving forward. If now that you're in the business, if this is not a top priority, there will be a competitor in your market that is treating their business as their number one priority. That is all in on the business, competing against you. And in many cases, if this is a little side gig to start out, it will always be a little side gig.
Yeah. I mean, and I totally agree with you. And there's also a correlation between the amount of attention you gave us during the sales process is probably indicative to the amount of attention you're going to give the business post-closing.
Right.
And how the prospective buyer doesn't understand that is a little odd. It's like, I have to talk to you on Saturdays. I have to talk to you after 7 p.m. I can't speak to you for the next 2 weeks. I'm traveling. I can't. And it's like, how the hell are you managing this business post-closing when I can't even educate you on the model?
I owned my first franchise when I was 23 years old. I knew nothing about business, about life, but I had zero other responsibilities. How did I become the number one operator in the system? Grinding it out, busting my butt. So for every non-operator out there who wants to put 10 hours a week into their business, there's a competitor in the market working 70 hours a week. Not saying you have to, but someone has to.
I totally agree with you. And it doesn't happen enough. And I don't know if it's naivete and people just feel like, and we've had this conversation before. I think a lot of people feel that they're a consumer, that this is a consumer transaction. And they feel like, look, you have something to sell and I have the money or the desire to buy it. Therefore, I'm in control. That's one of the biggest problems in any transactional relationship. He who has the gold feels that he rules. And that's just not true. It's the one that is awarding the franchise that is in total control, not the one with the money. And it kind of flips the script on, you know, you go to Best Buy, you don't like the price, you don't like the service. You just say, hey, I'm a consumer, I'm powerful, I'll take my money somewhere else. It's just that attitude doesn't work when you're investing, not purchasing, when you're investing in a franchise, especially when that franchise needs to be awarded before you can even invest in it. And this is the part that they don't get. And by the way, this is where a good consultant comes in to educate people on the process. And it's like, just so you know, everything you've done to date, you will never buy anything. You will never invest in anything. You will never get awarded a franchise. What you're doing is not going to work. Like this. Please just send me a text.
No.
No, we're going to speak to you. I want to hear your voice. We want to hear what you sound like. I want to hear your level of intelligence. I want to hear your line of questioning. I want to hear your business acumen. I want to hear how emotional you get. And I want to know that you're a fit for the brands that we're considering for you. So this is an old school business that really doesn't fit in many cases with the new way of doing things, which
Very
is
true.
Just email me, just text me. I don't want to speak to you. If I want to buy it, I will. It's like, you don't get it. None of that's going to work.
It's a good point. And I don't think we could fault the prospect because that's how things are purchased nowadays, right? That's how things are bought and sold. It's just not that way in franchising. This is a relationship building process. It's a mutual evaluation process. They're evaluating the prospect the same way the prospect is evaluating the franchisor. There needs to be engagement.
I totally agree.
I spoke to someone the other day who reached out to me. He's like, listen, I've been going through this process for a couple of months now, and I'm just not finding, right? I had a brand in mind. They never even called me back. And I just haven't been able to find the right brand. I'm back to interviewing now. And hearing that, like it, that like breaks my heart. It kills me, right? There's 4,000 brands out there. There's so many incredible concepts in franchising. There has to be a brand. This person just hasn't found the brand. So I asked him, what have you been doing, right? What's your approach to the process? Most people don't even know that there's such thing as franchise consultants. That's what we do, right? We help people. Brand selection is crucial, right? Step number one is like, let's find the right brand that we can, you know, guide through all the due diligence and putting together funding plans and all that. This particular gentleman happened to work with a consultant and told me that this consultant was someone who was displaced corporate America during COVID and started consulting. So here's someone that has no experience in franchising, has never owned a franchise, and he's now trying to advise this person on how to buy a franchise, and he's not showing the guy the right brands. And that is frustrating, right? So then it's easy to just walk away and say, oh, this is not right for me. Not necessarily the case. So I think an important step in this process is how you approach the process, who you choose to align yourself with that's going to advise you on making one of the most significant investment decisions, a life-changing decision for everyone involved, family members, partners, who is going to advise you in making this very important decision is a crucial first step.
I totally agree.
I would definitely partner with a consultant, and you have to interview people, ask the right questions, and make sure that this person knows what they're doing.
And I hate to say this, but most don't. Most people, most consultants in our industry do not know how to properly advise a buyer on navigating the process. And that's a shame because it reflects poorly on us. And like any industry, man, you know, they're not all equal. Right? Not all doctors, not all dentists, not all lawyers, not all teachers. I mean, that's everywhere. And with everything, it's not all equal. There are people who have mastered their craft like us. Like, we're intense. We're constantly reading. We're constantly learning. We're always being educated. We're always just challenging the status quo. We're always poking holes in things. And we're always investing in things. We're always doing things. Like, we're in it. Right, we're always involved in a brand in some capacity, develop operations, right? Just the execution, everything. I mean, we get down into marketing and advertising and, you know, new products. We're involved. And that really helps maintain really sharp skills. And it's a shame that a lot of people land with a schlub who just started doing this, who's never owned a business, who has not created wealth, who really doesn't know what they're doing, and they're advising these poor people on how to buy a business. It sucks.
True.
So people, and this is my favorite line, people need to be unreasonably selective who they allow in their life, period. And I mean unreasonably selective. Ask questions. Probe. Ask them, what makes you qualified to represent me in this transaction? They got triple over themselves. Because the answer is they don't have what it takes to advise you. And I'm glad you asked one pointed question. What are you going to do to manage risk for me? It's crickets.
We're disciplined, right? So
absolutely.
One of my disciplines is I don't take advice from people who haven't been where I want to be. If I want to run a marathon, I'm not going to hire some dude who is 350 pounds, smokes cigarettes, and eats Twinkies all day to coach me in preparing for this marathon. I'm going to hire like a former Olympian, right? I want to work with somebody who's been there before. So I just think that's an important rule. If I want to build wealth through franchising, I would want to work with someone who's done a lot.
I just did a LinkedIn video basically about what you just said. And to paraphrase it, and I think this might be a good segue actually to take us into fear. What I said on that video, when babies are born, they have two fears, the fear of falling and the fear of loud noises. Think about this. All other fears are manufactured by our parents, teachers, mentors, and life experiences. Like, and that's why kids do the craziest stuff with no shame in their game. They'll dance, they'll sing, they'll wear crazy stuff, crazy colors. As soon as they're a teenager, that's gone. No more singing, no more dancing, no more loud colors, no more crazy patterns on their clothes. Nope. All of a sudden, all the fear kicks in. Why? Parents, teachers, friends, mentors, and life experiences. So the point of the post was, be careful who you allow to influence your life and take advice from people who are where you want to be in life. You wanted to finish a marathon? Take advice from people who finish marathons, right? You want to lose 100 pounds? Take advice from Colton over at Tiny Homes, who actually knows how to lose 100 pounds. Take advice from people who have been there, done that. Take advice from people who are living the life that you want to live. And I'm amazed at how many people ask friends doing less than them, by the way, right? Denzel Washington actually had a great quote. I don't even know if it's his quote, but I got it from him. He said, the only people that will ever insult you are always people doing less than you. It is so true if you think about it. Any insult I've ever received, any stupid comment on social media, it's always from someone doing less than I am. Now, the guys that are above me, they just encourage you. Great job. Keep it up. Like your content, right? Like your business, like your
haters
model.
Haters are always doing less than trying to bring other people down.
Absolutely. Yep. But I'd like to talk about fear, because when you come to the show and you're like, let's talk about why people do not buy a franchise. I don't really believe that at the end of the day, the overwhelming majority of people that do not move forward are because of those reasons. I believe it's fear.
Well, yes, but I do think that there's thousands of brands out there in franchising. Your average American could name maybe a few dozen, maybe. So if you're not looking at the right brands that are growing and having success, if you're not identifying the right brands and that fit your specific investment objectives, it's going to get frustrating. It could easily get frustrating, and then you just walk away. What was the point?
Totally. So did you ever hear that story about Jeff Bezos when he was at the hedge fund? He told his boss he has a business idea. Did you ever hear it? Never heard of it? These are his words, not mine. He claims he's at a hedge fund. He walks up to his boss, his mentor, someone he respects immensely, and says, I need to talk to you about something. I have an idea. I'm going to be leaving the firm and I want to do this. And the boss says, let's go for a walk. They literally take a 2-hour walk through Central Park. And the conclusion of it is, look, I'm sure this is a great idea. However, this is probably a better idea for someone that doesn't have an amazing job like you. That's what he said to him. This Amazon thing, this
the
is a great idea.
The idea being selling books on
Amazon. Yeah. Yep. Getting involved. Remember, you're going way back. You're getting involved in the thing called the internet, right? Well, what's the internet, right? It's like you talking about a crypto and all this stuff. Well, what is that? So back then it was like, I want to get involved in the internet and I think the best way to do it is Amazon. Well, I find this fascinating. And of course, he could articulate this stuff into words better than me. He called it, Jeff Bezos says, I have a regret minimization model. And it is a framework that he uses to make very difficult decisions. His attitude is, visualization is so powerful. And I know you're into visualization and so am I. Like, I literally can put myself in a forward thinking situation. Like, if I'm thinking about buying a business, I could literally visualize myself standing behind the counter of that business and feeling what it would be like to do that. Okay. Does it feel right? Or does, like, visualization, I know you have your secret weapons, but I believe that one of my secret weapons for making decisions is absolutely the ability to internalize and the ability to visualize. And then I'm able to react, right? And without emotion, because you know my feelings on that. That great quote by Warren Buffett, to be successful in life, all you need is a sound conceptual framework for making decisions and the ability to keep emotions from corrupting that framework. Well, Jeff Bezos created the regret minimization framework model, and he puts himself at 80. This guy's 30-something years old. He's putting himself at 80. I'm 80 years old. I'm sitting in a rocking chair. I'm looking back. I had this idea about this company called Amazon selling books and blah, blah, blah. I didn't do it. How does that make me feel? And he's like, I'm going to regret not doing it. Boom. Quit. Moves on to Amazon. He took this regret minimization model and decision-making model. And he says it is literally, you know, the cornerstone to a lot of things that they do within Amazon to take that company to the next level. And my point of all of this is, I believe that the majority of people have no process, no framework, no model, no real ability to make difficult decisions. And therefore, they stay in the status quo and do nothing. And we call them, what do we call them? Mr.
Was Gonna.
That's right. Every family has that guy.
I was gonna, right. I mean, I had a client the other day who made a comment that the business that he's looking at will most likely require more time than he was expecting. And he wished he would have done this 10 years ago. And I said, that's funny, because the 60-year-old client that I spoke to a few weeks ago said the same thing, wish he did it when he was 50. You are 50, you wish you did it when you were 40. The 40-year-old's gonna, point is, it's never the right time. And there's always gonna be a million reasons not to do something. I think one of the problems is, so you talked about visualizing yourself in the business. I think one of the things that fear does to people is it distorts our ability to think clearly and rationally. And we only see the negative outcome when visualizing the business. When we start feeling those butterflies, that anxiety, right? Seneca has this great quote, we suffer more in imagination than in reality. All we can see and feel is what could possibly go wrong in the business. Most things that won't, right? So when we feel fear, we tend to overstate the negative consequences of our decisions. And we completely ignore what could be a positive outcome. What if this goes wrong and I just wasted a year of my life and the business fails? First of all, you didn't waste a year. You learned a lot through failure. Second of all, what if in the next year you have $1 million business and you're financially free and the opportunity to scale this thing to 5 million over the next couple of years, right? So if you flip the script on that thinking and thinking about, but what if things go well, right? And the other thing I love about fear is that it forces us to prepare and position ourselves, right? What if I'm running a marathon, go back to the marathon, I'm about to run a marathon. I feel not being able to finish the marathon. So what am I gonna do? Gonna hire a great coach. I'm gonna run my ass off and put myself in a position where that's not even an option. I fear starting this business and never acquiring a customer. Thank God we have that fear, because now we're gonna go reach out to every franchisee in the system, find out where they're marketing and how much money they're spending, and put ourselves in a position where we're coming in with enough capital to ramp this thing up really quickly and acquire a bunch of customers and become one of the top producers in the system.
That's the problem right there. Stop there, because that's the problem. Everyone focuses on the negative. We're almost predisposed to go negative, right? Yep. Everyone loves the car crash. Traffic flows beautifully on the road when everything's fine until the car crash, and everyone wants to see what happened. Everyone wants reality TV. Everyone wants to see everyone's life fall apart. Everyone wants to see the negative. I'm okay. I do all that. I do the take it to zero exercise. What happens if I go to zero? What does my life look like? How did it change? Like, do I bet the farm? Do I bet everything on a deal? No.
If the fear of the business failing is paralyzing, you're probably going too big. Because you don't view yourself being able to come back from the failure.
I do this with clients all the time. Take it to zero. What happened? Man, I just lost $250,000. Right. You have a net worth of $1 million. You lost $250,000. Right. How did your life change? Like, are you losing your home? Are you losing this? Did you lose your spouse? It's like, no, it just sucks. Okay, so it sucks to take the business to zero and lose $250,000. Well, I also quit my job. And in many cases, the clients are already unemployed. So they don't have what we call opportunity loss, right? Opportunity risk. There was no opportunity. You were unemployed, or you were losing your job, or AI replaced you. But the problem with decision-making is no one goes through the mental exercise of, this will be a huge success. What if? This could increase the quality of my life. This could solidify my relationship with my spouse. This could teach my children a valuable lesson. This could be a legacy to my children and grandchildren. This could be the retirement income that I currently don't have. No one has a pension anymore. All these people are retiring with 401ks and living off of that. So you're actually, what you're saying is exactly what I'm trying to say. If you're going to visualize, you can't just visualize the negative. You have to visualize the upside of the deal. And that's where we like asymmetrical investments. There's way more visualization of good coming from this deal than bad. And that asymmetry,
there's more potential for good than
exactly
bad. That's right.
Exactly. And those are the deals that we do. And that's what makes us get to yes. And that's what makes us stroke the check. That's what makes us get in the game. And have we failed? Of course we have. We dust ourselves off. We kept some cash dry. We make another investment and we spring for the fences once again. And that has been a wealth creation decision-making process. But you brought up something that I just want to riff on a little bit, because this has happened. Puriclean is a perfect example. Restoration business we bought in Maryland. Remember that guy? I did everything to make this work. And then we bought his assets. And what did we find in the storage unit? Boxes of unopened marketing material. You didn't do everything. You may have told yourself and your spouse that, but you did not do everything to make this business successful when you sold us all of your assets and there are 15 unopened boxes of marketing material. Again, that's like waving the flag, I surrender, with mountains of ammunition, right?
See, you know, when I hear that, that guy didn't fear failure enough. If he truly feared failure, you would have to think that he would be so motivated to succeed that he would never have an unopened box of marketing materials.
Right, right.
Like, and that's why I think fear is like so important. If you leverage the fear properly, it ends up becoming the greatest motivator.
Well, this is where I wanted to go, because I've seen this my entire life as an entrepreneur. You walk into a small business and they're standing in there. You and I have seen it. We've randomly visited how many businesses and the owners are there. And this is all I hear. And we really should just call people out for it. Your fear of doing sales and staying behind the counter is what's causing you to fail. You follow me? It's like your fear of doing sales is what's keeping you in the store, which is why you're failing. Just get out there and take action. Get out there. You're not managing your staff properly. Your fear of employees quitting is causing you to fail because you're not managing it. I'm afraid they're going to quit. How about this guy? Remember this guy from PTI? You're overpaying your staff out of fear they may leave, and this excessive labor expense is causing you to fail. You see what's happening here? It's like root cause, and then your fear of the perfect location has you paying exorbitantly high rent. That is causing you to fail. Your fear of posting on social media and your absence of proper marketing is actually causing you to fail. This is what people don't get. Your fear of your spouse losing respect for you, if you fail, is causing you to fail. Are you understanding where I'm going with this? It's like, are you afraid to fail, or are you afraid of what others will think of you if you fail? And this is where people need to flip the script. What do others think of you doing nothing and being poor and being unproductive and staying in a dead-end job?
And talking about all the things you wanted to do in your life but never did.
Winston Churchill has a great quote. He goes, success is not final. Failure is not fatal. I love that, man. Success is not final. Failure is not fatal. It is the courage to continue that counts. It is so true. And this whole pod, I'm telling you, because it's courage. It really is. It's a lack of action. This whole thing just comes down to whatever you're saying to me, it's all bullshit. Okay, here's the deal. You don't believe in you. You have no confidence in you. You don't think you can do it. You lack confidence. You're saying you're afraid and you're not going to move forward. That's what it comes down to. When someone calls me up and is like, yeah, I spoke to my wife. I spoke to my attorney. I spoke, the economy, Biden, Trump, this, that, election year. It's all bullshit. You don't believe in your abilities to do this and be successful. And that sucks.
Move faster. Act with urgency. Pretend you could die next week because you can, and it's never going to be the perfect time. And you mentioned the spouse. I find that in many cases, the franchisor, the consultant, the spouse, believe in the person making the investment more than the investor that believes in themselves.
Wow.
And but that does bring us to spousal support, because that's another big one.
People have asked me, give me best business advice. You want good advice? Choose your spouse wisely. It's the best business advice I could give anyone. Choose your spouse wisely. If you don't have spousal support, you're a dead man walking. It's just the reality of it. Because when you're down and you're having a tough time grinding it out in the beginning, those early heavy lift days, you need to come home with someone that is going to really boost you up, encourage you. You got this. I believe in you. You're doing this to protect our family. You're doing this to give us a better life. What's that quote on entrepreneurs? Entrepreneurship is living your life like most people won't, so you can live the remainder of your life like most people can't. I love that. And it's true.
Yep.
Yeah, you're going to grind it out for the first year, two, three, depending on how big you want to build it. But you will end up with a nice enterprise that's enviable, and you'll be living a lifestyle that most people won't be able to. It's the reality.
Yep. Long game over short game, short-term pain for long-term freedom always. The suggestion with spousal support is, if you think you're just going to go through this process alone and expect your wife to just hop on board at the end at the closing table, it's most likely not going to happen. This is a family decision. And I always say, how could you expect your wife to make this decision to give you the approval to move forward without learning everything that you've learned over the past 3 months? You wouldn't be able to make this decision without going through this process. Your wife has no idea, or your husband or whoever, your spouse has no idea what you're really doing. I mean, mentioning I'm about to buy this painting company, you know, in passing at the dinner table, like, get them involved early on, right? Let them weigh in on their goals, their future plans, what they would want to get out of the business. Maybe they want to be involved in the business, right? Make sure everyone's on the same page. Make sure all hands are in the center of the table. We're heading down the right path together, and get them involved and let them learn, let them ask their own questions and really understand what we're doing. It's way easier for them to be on board if they get involved early on in the process.
I agree. And it's underrated. And I think that most people believe that, oh, I'll get my spouse on board. I know how to handle them. You don't. Everyone has different risk tolerance. Everyone has a different way of seeing their future. And you're right. Everyone makes decisions differently. You need to get your spouse involved very, very early on in the process. They need to experience the validation calls, the enthusiasm. They need to hear the negatives. They need to hear the risks so that they can assess and weigh and determine what's a good path for the family. You know, when you talk about that, and this goes back to decision-making process, I think at a young age, because I've been an entrepreneur my whole life. I mean, I've been hustling since I was probably, you know, eight, you know, raking golf balls. Seriously, I mean, I've been at this a long time. And my family members and friends and people I grew up with, that, you know, they all know that I've been at this a very long time. I mean, I was raking golf balls out of ponds and looking for, you know, ways to make money literally my entire life, going back to elementary school. And why am I saying that? Because I do believe that there are brain games that need to be played, and the brain is insanely powerful. And I believe that when you triggered this thought with your short-term comment. What was your comment? Short-term
pain for long-term freedom.
Okay. So what I'm saying is, when you don't want to do that and you do short-term avoidance, right, of making a big decision to avoid anxiety and to avoid fear, it actually creates long-term maintenance of fear. Am I making sense? So it's like, oh, no, I don't want to do that. That scares me. Okay. You know, like a parent today, it's like, oh, okay. You don't want to say hi to the neighbors. That's okay. You don't want to do, that's okay. You signed up for flag football. I don't want to do this. Oh, that's okay. You don't know what you're doing to your brain in those moments. You're saying commitment's not important. I could bail anytime I want. I could avoid short-term pain. What you don't realize is what you're doing when you become an adult. You now have to manage your long-term anxiety, your long-term fears, Because as life goes on, decision-making gets way more complicated than I don't want to be in flag football. I don't want to play the instrument anymore. See, we never did that in my house. You commit, you're in. That's it. You finish to the end. There's no bailing. You manage those fears. You're afraid to play that instrument in front of your school? Then learn how to play that instrument better and overcome those fears. So my whole point of this is people need to be very careful engaging in things, walking away, engaging in things, feeling fear, walking away. Make some tough decisions and fight like hell to have a better life for you and your family.
Yeah, I think you bring this back to the comfort crisis, which is, I believe, a huge societal issue right now. I heard someone on X the other day talking about, he used the term being comfortably poor. And I don't know if that's the right term or not, but there is an entire generation of people living this YOLO lifestyle saying, I don't see this future, family, dream home, right? Great job, huge business. I just don't see the prospects for that, or I'm not willing to put the effort into that. So I'm just going to play video games, right? Spend all my money on Taylor Swift tickets and whatever. And I'm just going to kind of get comfortable because it's way easier than dealing with that uncomfortable feeling, taking that risk and putting in all of this effort. But is that the answer?
No, of course it's not.
To avoid?
No, that's the problem. That's the problem right there. And so fast forward. So what does this couple do that you described, this couple, the YOLO couple? Right? Whatever you just described and whatever they're going to do, what does their life look like? I will tell you right now what they're doing right now. Okay. They are on a device at this moment, watching other people live a fascinating life. That's what they're doing. And that's what too many Americans have gotten comfortable with, is jumping on social media and scrolling through, watching other people live an amazing life, watching other people take short-term, long-term risks, watching other people make huge investments. And meanwhile, they're living this just crappy, mediocre life. And what's crazy is they call it YOLO, which is you only live once, right? Then do something like remarkable. Be something. Be the best version of yourself, right? So it doesn't even make sense to me. It's such a contradiction. Oh, I believe in YOLO. What am I saving for? A house? I'm just going to buy $1,000 Taylor Swift tickets. What am I saving for? What a crappy attitude and what a horrible life. Like, I don't want that life.
Everything in life that you want is on the other side of something that sucks. I love that quote. I think it's Sahil Bloom who said that. Struggle is where greatness is born. You want to lose 100 pounds? Forget the hamburgers, forget the Big Macs, and forget sitting on the couch eating popcorn all day long. You're going to be busting your ass in the gym. And you're going to be eating really healthy food that probably doesn't taste as good. You want to create wealth? You got to leave the job. You got to walk away from the paycheck. That 200,000, right? They always seem to pay like just enough, 200 grand, just enough money, right? That it pays the bills, not where I want to be, but it's hard to walk away from it. Got to walk away. You got to walk away, and you're going to lean out your personal life. It's going to be pretty shitty for a while. But on the other side of that is the opportunity to build something so much bigger than your $200,000 paycheck could ever be. I mean, we're talking equity in a multi-million dollar business that doesn't require full time and attention, right? Like the new status symbols, as far as I'm concerned, control over time, control over where and when you work, the ability to be home for dinner and at your kids' events. I hear this all the time. That's a big one. Ability to travel when you want. And a fit mind and body to be healthy. That's it. But you're gonna deal with some short term suck in order to accomplish any of those things.
Absolutely, it's all action. You remember that thing hanging in my office? Action is the fundamental key to success. Period. That's it. It's action, and that's what everything is lacking. So people lack action. They lack what you could call it execution. They lack confidence. I think that really sums up this whole thing. It's all about fear. Why? What was your question? What prevents someone from purchasing a franchise, a business? It's not having a proper decision-making process. It's not having the courage to overcome your fear. not taking action, and it's choosing to basically, I don't want to put in the short-term pain for the long-term success, for the long-term gain.
That's right.
I don't want to do it.
And keep in mind, when someone walks away, right, they entered this process with a dream. And when they walk away, the dream didn't die.
That's right.
The dream is still there. And that's the potential of living a life of regret.
Exactly. You got to go out and get it. You got to get out there.
Well said. Hopefully this was more motivating than not. And we made the point, if you're considering owning a franchise, pick up the phone, engage, make some phone calls, learn a lot. If you fail, fail forward. And at some point, you just have to make it happen.
Love that.
All right, man.
Good hanging out with you.
Good stuff. Talk to you next week.
Talk to you later.